Most people probably already know who I am, but my name is Jeff Schertz. I'm the lead Microsoft Solutions Architect at Polycom. Been a Link MVP for a number of years, and I guess you might have seen a blog article or two in the past that I've done. Maybe, oh yeah? Okay, autographs will be after the session, apparently. So you know, let me go back a slide. So anybody who's interested in video and they've looked at the sessions, there's almost some overlap, which is good because there's a lot of sessions in a lot of, or maybe not a lot of rooms. So there's going to be some overlap between this and a few other video sessions. There's one tomorrow on 400 level video deep dive. There's another couple sessions that are going to be similar to some of the content I'm going to go over. So it's good to know that. But basically, what we just saw in the keynote, video is a big piece of Link 2013. And there's really no, based on how many faces are in here, that seems pretty evident. And I know that there's one thing is having video. It's another thing actually being able to utilize it and have it add value and work well. So my goal with this is to have you guys kind of walk away from this session. If you don't know anything about video, you'll probably know more than you need to know. If you know a lot and maybe you're worried about deploying it in your network, maybe you haven't done anything, maybe OCS, you just had stuff set to SIF and you're like, I'm afraid to open it up because I don't know what's going to happen to the network. I'm hoping that by the end of this, you'll have maybe you won't be so afraid of it and take a look at it and start utilizing it a little bit more. So to do that, I'm going to kind of cut up into four chunks. I want to make sure that when I get to the end, everybody that's in the room, if you don't have much background in how the video works in Link, that you've got the foundation to understand the individual sections and the steps after that. We'll take a look at the video experience from the user interface side, what it kind of looks like, the default stuff, what you can do to manipulate the view, and then how that impacts basically bandwidth, so bit rate, frame rate, all those components. Then we'll get into like the 300 level stuff. We're actually going to look at numbers. We'll look at bit rates. We'll compare resolutions and see what's actually happening. Because this is very difficult. With OCS in Link 2010, it was easy. The real-time video codec was pretty flat in terms of the choices. So you kind of had big, middle, large in terms of capabilities. Using SVC and RTV together, there's so many potential choices. And it fluctuates so much in the middle of a call, it's very difficult to say, well, for X call, I'm going to use Y bandwidth because it's constantly going to be changing. Well, it doesn't necessarily constantly change. You're going to see, because I'm going to cover a lot of things that are capabilities and what may or may not happen, but it's not an indication that that's always happening. So it's not like every time you're in a video call, it's going crazy. It can be very steady state. It just depends on the experience and what people are doing. Oh, let me go back one. So then the last section is I've actually got some data directly from Microsoft. They were nice enough to share information from their own monitoring servers for the 2013, so the last year, of actual video data usage. We've got some graphs, and we'll take a look at that data. And Microsoft would be a good example as a customer that utilizes Link heavily internally and what it's actually done or will or won't do to their network. So to start off with, I actually caught a little flack for starting off with RTV, but I want to tell a story through these slides. Real-time video is still in the Link platform in Link 2013. It has to be. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do calls with Link 2013 systems, standard video systems that support that codec. It's not the primary video codec. It's definitely second on the list, but it's still in there. It's changed a little bit. It's, for most part, it's the same as the way it was in OCS in Link 2010. Microsoft added a couple more resolutions, mainly widescreen resolutions, because in earlier versions, the only time you ever got widescreen was HD. VGA was always 4x3. The smaller resolutions are always 4x3. You look at devices and cameras today, there's not much out there that's going to be capturing a 4x3 image. Everything's widescreen. Even my phone has two widescreen cameras front and back. So when RTV's in play, those resolutions were added to support similar bit rates to what was already there for SIF and for VGA, but use all the camera. I mean, you're capturing the edges. And we'll get into cropping a little bit more and see what that actually looks like. But that was added for RTV. So just to make sure that everyone understands, the main component here is that the H.264 video component that was brought into Link 2013 utilizes scalable video coding. What's important is that SVC isn't the thing that brings the multiple streams and the gallery view and all that. That's actually Link 2013. The system itself does that. So when you're looking at a gallery view, walk around the Expo Center, you see those Link Room systems and the Panoramic cameras and all those pieces, it doesn't mean SVC is using all those five tiles. So I'll go through that in a bit. So it's important to understand that both SVC and both RTV can and will be in play in calls, It just depends on if you're talking straight in Link 2013, or you have a mixture of legacy, and by legacy, it's 2010 and OCS, so legacy clients. So there's a number of capabilities and features that SBC added. I don't want to go into all those because, Link's been out for a couple of years, and you guys probably know all that stuff. 1080p, there's a lot of capabilities that were touted. One of the most interesting ones is hardware compatibility in terms of encoding. So RTV doesn't have this. So the back story was always, HD was in older versions, but it was very difficult to actually encode or send or receive high definition in RTV. It didn't happen very often. But SVC is able to utilize, and it's a combination of Link client, DirectX capabilities, Windows versions. But if you have the right mixture and many of the common Intel core platforms, then you can actually get some of that encoding processing and push it off, offload it off the CPU onto the GPU or even to a camera in this case. The Logitech camera that's out there on a number of systems, including the LRS systems, that actually supports UVC 1.5. So what I'm showing in this graph, or the comparisons of these two task manager graphs for the network, or for the CPU, is that same exact system. So my Lenovo T410 laptop, I make a call with a Microsoft LifeCam, 720p to peer-to-peer to a coworker, disconnect that camera, plug in the UVC-supported camera, and I make the exact same call, and the CPU is literally in half. So just an indication that those higher bandwidths certainly or those higher resolutions certainly have an impact on bandwidth, but you have to be able to even create them first. You have to be able to capture and encode and send them. And what we're seeing with Link 2013 and newer equipment is that that's going to be more common. So the first thing is, can I even make that video happen? Then once I have the ability to do it, will I do it? And can I send it to the other end across the network? So the next couple of slides, I'm going to go through the scaling capabilities of SVC. And what's important to understand here is that the specification for the codec that's used in Link 2013 has a whole layer or multiple modes of choices, but they're not actually implemented in the codec today. So these mode 0, mode 1, up through mode 3, they're additive layers of capabilities that add frame rates and qualities and resolutions. Link 2013 today just does mode 1. So mode 0 is no layering, basically. Mode 1 is called temporal, and what that does is actually gives you the ability to do multiple frame rates in a single stream. So I'll cover the sending and receiving streams in a little bit more detail on a slide coming up, but what's important to know is RTV, when you're doing that, it's a single stream. You're sending and encoding a single stream, active speaker. When the panoramic comes in, that's a secondary stream, but we'll get into the panoramic in a little bit. But with SVC, it has the ability to send and receive multiple streams. And also, not to overcomplicate it, you can also send and receive multiple streams of SVC and RTV. So I'll break that out in a few slides. So again, it's that it isn't SVC that is multiple streams. It can be a part of those streams. So what the temporal gives you from a benefit to the platform is that when you encode a stream to an endpoint, so what I've got here is, let's say I'm client one, I'm connected to the Link 2013 AVMCU, and another client joins a call. It could be a meet now, conference call, scheduled, et cetera, but it's not a peer-to-peer call. We're going through the MCU. The same capability is applicable to a peer-to-peer call, but there's only ever one request. It's like, I only need one video, so you just send best that can happen at that time. So in this call, I'm encoding video. The resolution is not important at the moment, and I'm sending 15 frames per second. If another system joins and they don't even support 15, maybe 7.5, and this is just an example. It doesn't mean phones only support 7.5 and tablets only support 15. These are just diagrams. But the requesting, the endpoint that connects and requests video says, I can only take 7.5. Well, because of temporal scaling, we can take that same stream and just drop half the frames, basically. The AVMCU can say, all right, well, I'm going to send you a stream, but I'm just going to drop half the frames. It's not 50% of the data. So just because you drop half the frames doesn't mean you drop the bandwidth in half. It's more like 20, 30% savings because there's a lot of overhead and other things going on. But there's no impact to my client, my computer that's sending the video. Now, in the inverse, if we look at someone joins the call and wants a higher frame rate, and I'll get into what triggers that in a minute, but let's just say they ask for 30 frames and I'm able to send it, I have to start encoding more frames. So I'll kick it up to 30 frames, but that same temporal ability allows me to only send one. I don't have to send a 15 and a 30. So there's certainly bandwidth savings here because you can see I'm only encoding and sending one stream. out to the MCU, and each individual system gets a stream that it requests. Now, it's not one-to-one. If there's 100 clients connected, there's not going to be 100 different versions. And in this scenario, there's only like 3 frame rates that are applicable anyway. So when there gets to be a lot of systems asking for video, the encoder, my client, has the final decision, basically. I can say, well, I understand I'm getting these many requests, but I don't have either the processing power or the network bandwidth or whatever to actually send that much stuff. So I'm going to send a few, and you guys will all take whatever is best for you. If it's something you can or can't support, then you might go down a resolution or a frame rate.
Quick question. By comparison, what would that look like in
2010? So two things. One, I want to hold questions for the end because we have to mic them so that they're in the recording. So if you want to just bring that up at the end.
Sure.
And then 2010 for RTV, it would just be one line because we're just doing, it's basically what we refer to as least common denominator. So if I'm encoding video and there's a whole mixed version of requesters, I have to give it out in a format that everyone can receive. So if a downloadable client comes in, everybody's brought down to that level. So that's a very good benefit of this scenario. It's not just saving bandwidth, but not watering down the video experience for everyone else. So when we look at mode 2 and higher, which is, again, it's part of SVC, but it's not part of the actual implementation. So the codec doesn't do this yet. So this is something that could happen in the future. It's written there in the, you know, in the code, or not in the code, but in the white papers. Same scenario, but we're flipping resolution for frame rate. So somebody requests 360p, I send it. A system comes in that can't support that, asks for a low resolution. I can't extract that resolution as a layer from the one I'm already sending. The data is not, it's not in mode 2 capable format yet, and it's not layered in a way that I can easily just strip it out. So the hit on my client is now I have to encode another video stream and send that. So those are additive. That's A plus B. There's no, well, 360 has some of that data, so let me pull some of it. It's a completely separate stream. And if we go higher, it's the same approach. So again, the more requesters, if I have the ability to send that, I can send these other frame or these other resolutions. But these start to be not really... I'll go in a couple slides to show like where the real world stuff comes into play. But again, just because you see this doesn't mean I'm in a gallery view call with 7 people. I'm sending out 7 different resolutions. What does my network bandwidth look like? That's not the way that it works. So going back a couple slides, I mentioned that there's multiple streams. So there's also multiple video sources. So primarily there's the main video source, which is the camera, USB camera, whatever that might be. The panoramic comes specifically from the Polycom CX roundtable devices. That's the only thing that provides that panoramic strip. That's cut out, and there's spots available for the link client. That's treated as a secondary stream. So when you look at all these numbers for bandwidth, you always have to think about, well, if panoramic is in the call, if someone plugs in a roundtable and joins the call, now we've got another stream going out, and that's additional bandwidth. So my Link 2013 client, at any given time, has the capability of sending, encoding and sending 5 separate streams. So this is like 5 different resolutions and frame rate mixtures and quality mixtures. It doesn't mean I'm actually sending 5, because one, I'd have to have that many clients on the other end, and two, I'd have to have a lot of processing overhead, a lot of bandwidth, and the reason to send that many. I'd have to have so many people, and we'll get into the layouts in a bit, but you'll see how it could happen, but it almost never does. Panoramic's kind of the same thing, but there's only a handful of panoramic resolutions, which we'll see in the slide coming up. So it's more of a theoretical limit. So you can send and receive a number of streams, but at any given time in these multi-party calls, it's more like 1 or 2, and we'll see those real numbers. So this kind of indicates what I've been talking about, that just because somebody requests for something doesn't mean it's going to send it. So this is kind of a mixture of different resolutions and different frame rates. So I could be sending 3 streams, and there could be 4 or 50 clients utilizing the stream that's closest to what they're asking for, but still within the constraints of what they're actually able to decode and display. So this one here basically shows a mixture of different clients. We've got a link client, a web app. We've got Link 2010 up in the 2 o'clock position. The Windows application, the new modern app, which we just saw, is going to get some additional benefits. And then the mobile application. Each of these applications have different limits in terms of how many streams they can send and receive and how many people you're going to actually see. And they also support support RTV as well. So if we look at the dashed lines, we see that the Link 2010 client is sending an RTV signal, and that dashed line gets kicked out to all of the 2013 clients that have gallery. So four of those squares on the Link 2013 client would be SVC and one would be RTV. And I don't know the difference. Maybe if you really were able to look closely and compare the qualities, you might be able to make a guesstimate, but the idea is that it doesn't matter. So these mixed mode calls, I join over Link 2010, nothing is different for me because I still have a 2010 client, it doesn't magically have a gallery, it's still active speaker, and everyone that's on 2013 doesn't all of a sudden get active speaker and their gallery vanishes. So the native experience of the version client is kept untouched. So if we add a second source in, throw a panoramic in there, now we've got two things. One, we've got another resolution, another video system or signal to encode and send. But because there's an RTV client in this call, we've got to send two. We don't want to do least common denominator and send a low resolution RTV panoramic to all of these clients that can support higher definition. So based on how many things in terms of how many cameras you're connecting and who's the active speaker and what different clients, you can start to get in these scenarios where one client may have a very high upload or very high download, another client may not at all. It all depends on what that client is and what it's showing. So if we look at how we can control some of that, or not necessarily control it, but how the bandwidth is a kind of result of people playing with resolutions and having different size screens and everything. First thing is there's different conferencing, or there's different views available. So default gallery view is available when there's multiple users. There's scenarios where the gallery is disabled or turned off in large meetings. I always have the ability just to go to speaker view. So if for some reason I don't want gallery, I can just pick the active speaker view. What's interesting about Link is it's very smart about asking for video that no one would ever see. So if I'm on a call and everyone is not looking at my video for some reason, I'm not the active speaker, and the last person who sees my video like goes to active speaker or mutes the video or does something, the MCU is aware. It's like, hey, no one's looking at you. No one needs to see you, so stop encoding. Stop sending the data. Stop encoding the data. And then the instant that it comes back, the MCU will say, hey, we need to see that video again, so go ahead and turn it on. So one of the things you'll notice in the experience is as you mess with the screen or you like maximize the gallery to another screen or you change layouts, you'll typically see the Link photo show up for just a split second. Because what's happening is the audio is there, obviously, on the back end. But Link is saying, hey, we need to renegotiate video. It's not a whole like media stand-up with ice unturn everything again because that channel is already open. It's just, hey, start sending your video to me again. So it's like kind of an inherent video mute, so you're never wasteful of any of the bandwidth. Video Spotlight's interesting in that anyone who has presenter rights in the conference call can lock anyone as the presenter or the active speaker. So it could be someone who's actually speaking. It could be somebody who's asleep on the call and you want to point out to everyone. Bring them up full screen, widescreen. So anyone with presenter rights can do that. In those scenarios, only the person who's active speaker is actually encoding and sending video. Everyone else's cameras basically turn off. They still probably see the little blue light on the camera because it's like they're still on video, but it's the processing usage would go down, the network bandwidth would go down because there would be no encoding at that point. And then the compact view just turns video off. So if you're on a really bad connection and you don't necessarily want to stop video, you want to send your video, but you want to hide it, you can hide this delay or the window. And by hiding that window, you're no longer asking for that video and you're no longer downloading it. So I kind of mentioned this in that slide before with all the arrows going in 74 different directions. But Link 2013 and Link Web App, the gallery is 5. So the LRS solution, the gallery is 5. The modern application is actually limited to 4, but I've been told that a future update's going to expand that out to 5. The demo we saw today was probably still using the current mobile application, or there was only 4 band members in KISS. Maybe that was why there was only 4 windows. So that's going to kick up to 5. But the panoramic's not support on that one yet. So I don't want to go through all the details, but the thing to think about is different clients have different limits on how much they can even display. So not every Link user in a call is always going to be asking or trying to send that same amount of video. So there's a capability, so cropping and smart framing, kind of been thrown around different terminology. They sort of mean two different things. So let me kind of go in reverse order. Smart framing is basically an SVC-only capability. So when you're doing RTV, this is not something that RTV would do. My Link client's capturing my video. It's finding my face, so as I move side to side, if you've ever done a call, you'll actually see the video. To the other user on the other end, it almost looks like a pan zoom type thing. It's clearly not, because I've got a fixed USB camera on my end. It's basically just finding my face, sending some coordinates to the other end through the RTP stream, and then saying, when you crop, make sure you crop this. Don't just drop the ends. user's over here, crop all this portion, and it's constantly updating it as the user or as the person on video moves back and forth. There's some scenarios where it won't be cropped, because typically in a, and you'll see on the floor, you'll see most of the gallery view calls you see up are squared, but any place that's got a link room system connected, you'll see widescreen. So certain devices are programmed to do widescreen because they're room systems and you don't want a square image. There's also the ability to pick out multiple faces. So my wife didn't want to be on the screenshot, and I tried it with my cat, and it did not work. But I took a photo of myself, held it up, and within about 2 seconds, it saw that there were two people in the screen. Kicked me out widescreen. And then when I put the phone down, it takes about 10 seconds, and it realizes that other person's gone, and it goes back to cropping. So my client is sending that data, but the other end showing it doesn't necessarily have to use that data. So most of the link clients will do that and default to that square view. And in a couple slides, we'll see why that's really applicable. But some of the room systems, they don't necessarily have to do that. So some of the stuff you may see out on the floor is that what looks like cropped on one end is actually widescreen. Where that's important is that there's no square resolution. So when you're seeing squares, you're still getting all the data. That endpoint is encoding whatever's being captured. It's a 4x3 or 16x9. And it's sending it over the network. And all that's happening is the display on that client's end is just hiding it. And it's all for real estate, because you can fit five squares in better than you can fit five rectangles, because as everything gets wider, the video gets shorter and smaller. That can be beneficial, and I'll go over why that can be good. But when you're talking about video quality, why show, like in this example here, why show the edge of the room in a chair? Why not leave that space so I can have a taller image, higher resolution, and fit more faces on there? So this example shows that in these two calls, when one's video spotlight locked and one's just normal, so when you lock video spotlight, it does the wides, that's one way to trigger it. The bandwidth did not change. And how I was able to get two screenshots at the exact kilobit, I'm not really sure. That must have been luck. But if you look at those calls, they will be the same exact bandwidth it's the exact same call. So there's no square resolution. That data's there. It's just not shown on the screen. So where that comes into play is that this is all about real estate, right? It's like video has to fit on the screen. And when you're talking about standard conferencing systems, or just video conferencing in general, it's video, it's people. So I'm going to use the whole screen for the video. But Link is a collaborative solution where you've got a lot of other components in it. So if we just take maximums or highest theoreticals and go, I'm going to maximize full screen, and you know, like the other one, not the one where the screen stays white, but where the screen goes black and you lose all the buttons and you lose the attendee list and it's just all about the video. If you're on so 4K is going to have it's going to apply to this stuff, but it doesn't apply today. So everything you'll learn from this, in the future, there's going to be more room to squish this stuff down. But right now, 1920 by 1080 is really the biggest monitors anyone's going to have on a Surface, laptop, whatever, even large screens. So what happens there is that when I do a peer-to-peer call, it could be 1080p, that full screen. But when I bring a number of people into the gallery, I'm not asking for five 1080p streams. We're not doing a 30 meg call. As the screen size, or as the resolution shrinks on the screen, that bandwidth drops accordingly. So when you compare those two side by side, you can see that the conference call, the gallery call, is actually going to probably use a lot less bandwidth, because I have a lot less pixels on my screen lit up with actual video data. And then take that one step further, and I mean, this is what you typically do with Link. You don't just throw everybody in video and chat. I mean, you can do it, but it's about the other modalities that come into this rich meeting experience. So when I put stuff like the attendee list and content on the screen, the gallery is just shrunk down to almost, I wouldn't say unusable, but when you want to switch to active speaker, you see that video, you can do that. But normal users, if they're not messing with that layout and they leave it here, these are the lowest resolutions to use. So this bandwidth of this call, from the video standpoint, is less than just a RTV call with the Link or an OCS MCU at VGA one stream. So what's interesting is you look at the real estate used for these calls. The more people you put in it, the less pixels you're lighting up. So the opposite is usually what people thought when Link first came out. It was like, hey, when I add 2 and 3 and 4 and 5, how much bandwidth am I actually using? Now, obviously, 5 was picked as a limit for a number of reasons. I mean, you could layer this out and put 20 people up there. But as you see with the numbers in a few slides, it's kind of a bell curve to it. And at some point, that return is going to not be as good. And it's going to start swinging back up the other way, because you're not losing resolution. You're just adding bandwidth. One other important point to make out is that the screen size is almost completely irrelevant. So the resolution of that system or that screen is what's important. So a 5-inch screen on a camera, if it has the same pixel depth as an 80-something inch monitor hooked up to LRS, it doesn't matter whatever video I send. So don't think when you're looking at those LRS systems in the expo that they the huge bandwidth, because I could actually get the same amount of bandwidth to a phone or to a Surface or anything like that. So it's all about the pixels. How many individual pixels are we actually encoding data? There's a couple of unique experiences with Link where if you've ever tried to do a video call in Link and you have multiple monitors, like I have two set up at home, a lot of times I will put content on one and video on the other. So now I have more real estate, so I'm actually asking for a little bit more content data, a little bit more video data. You can't easily use both screens for video. You can do it, but you have to manually drag the screen across. And if you have five people, you're going to cut someone's head in half. No one ever does this, but you have the ability to try it. Try it sometime and watch your network card. You'll actually see the bandwidth go up and up, unless there's something on the other end that's restricting the ability to send that. And even though you're asking for it, you're still getting a lower resolution. But the Link Room system has a view for that, because it's really applicable, because if you do a conference call and you don't have video, and you're not using another screen, why not use it? So it does it in a smart way where it will put two on one and three on the other and the panoramic on one. So when that happens, it has nothing to do with the fact that it's 84-inch screens. It has to do with the fact that you're lighting up two, you know, 1080p screens with video, and then that resolution individually could be added in. And I mentioned the panoramic. So that's built into the Link client. It's added by anyone who joins these conference calls. You can see that when content's not applicable, the roundtable isn't impacting the size of the gallery, because all we're doing is pushing the gallery up. Gallery is impacted by width more than height, because when we add more people in, the aspect ratio doesn't change. So we had to shrink height and width. So when content comes in, the gallery will get small, but the panoramic will typically stay pretty large, because usually when you're using one, there's a lot of people in that conference room, and we want to retain that experience. One little note about the panoramic is, with the main video source, you always see your local preview and it's mirrored. Working with standards-based systems, they don't do that. So when you raise your right hand, it looks like you're raising your left hand, and you try to fix your hair and it's very odd. Link, when they came out with adding video versions ago, they mirror it specifically, so it looks like you're looking into a mirror. That's live image. So if you raise your hand, it happens instantly. The panoramic, it's actually being encoded and then pushed back up to your screen. So you may actually see a slight delay between what you see in the active window and what actually shows up on the panoramic. And it's never reversed, because it would look really silly if you're in a room and there's wording or anything. It would be backwards. So let's take a look at some of the numbers. And one thing, I kind of added this slide just last week because I was thinking about it. And clearly we're talking about planning for video bandwidth, but you don't want to forget about audio. Audio is not embedded in the video call. It's a separate stream. It's marginal compared to what we'll see for video numbers, but it's important. And it's always the most important piece of that. I mean, if we lose video and we don't have audio, then it really doesn't help. But if you're planning for video and you can't get audio to work well, then you've got other things you need to look at. The other thing is that there's two streams you have to think about. So there's the payload, the media, and that's where most of the numbers are. But there's always some additive, and we're talking 5, 10, 15 kilobits, so not much. But there's that transmission, that secondary transmission where some of the messaging is going between the two systems, so they're able to negotiate. That's how they ask for certain things in terms of, like, well, I would like a different resolution. It's anything outside of the media payload itself. So for the more streams that are in there, there's a small amount that's added to it. But these numbers are straight out of TechNet. You can look them up if you want, but small numbers. And it's interesting how they're to the tenth. They're very specific numbers. There's a lot more history. These numbers have been around for quite a while. There's a lot more guidance on that. Video is kind of new. We take a look at video, we got nice rounded up numbers. So I'm pretty sure Microsoft just said, hey, this is what we see, let's round it up a little bit, and then maybe round it up a little bit more and just make everybody happy. So they're very whole round numbers. And you'll see the actual video is pretty close to these numbers when you're doing it. So the first thing is there's a lot more resolutions. RTV had four, actually had five. There were four for the main camera, QCIF, CIF, VGA, 720p. QCIF was like almost impossible to actually negotiate. It was in there, almost never seen it done. At that point, you just wouldn't get video. So really it was CIF, again, that low, medium, high experience, and then one stream in the panoramic for RTV. Adding SVC added a whole bunch more resolutions. So some of these resolutions could be RTV or SVC. But there's a lot more choices. So the first thing is that when someone changes a window size, it's not like obvious. It's like, well, that's clearly high def because it went widescreen. That's clearly SIF because it looks like crap. I mean, it was so easy to tell. Here, you can't tell the difference. I mean, you can look at some of the numbers, but I couldn't eyeball and say, oh, that's 540p or that's 480p. It's very difficult to tell that. So the user experience isn't changed much in terms of when they, you know, the video, the window's not changing sizes, and it's not like bad to good or best. It's a good quality, a good resolution for that size. And as they kick up the window, you might see it look a little pixelated at first as that resolution picks up, and then it clears up. And then when you minimize it, it does the same. So there's a bandwidth calculator that you guys have probably all seen. You just type in link bandwidth calculator, find it's Excel. There's a tab in it, which is all red text, which you typically shouldn't mess with. There's a couple sessions where that stuff will be covered. If you know what you're doing, you can play with the numbers. If you don't, you should leave it alone. But they're based on, and there's a number in there. If you want to adjust that number, you can change all the calculations. But the guidance in there is to use basically 80% of the max numbers for your planning. That's a very, I wouldn't say a high number, but when you look at the actuals, you rarely are sitting at 80% for the call. Something that's important with video is, right now if I was being recorded for video, the data would be pretty low because I'm not moving around too much, the background is static. I mean, we're not talking about high definite, you know, like transformers or something where everything in the screen's flying and changing colors. It's just talking heads, maybe some hand motion. So realistically, you'll see small spikes where you approach that high or that maximum number. But typically, you'll see between 50, 60, maybe 75 of the actual number as the average. So you could plan averages at 50%. You wouldn't leave yourself any overhead for forward error correction, as an example, because you want to plan for a real network, not a network that never has any packet loss. So when there is packet loss and when there isn't, those numbers will go up, and the numbers in the guidance that Microsoft has includes all that. So if you look at some of the older stuff they had, and I think I even showed it in audio. Yeah, audio, it was like, here's the payload, here's plus the IP header, some more details, plus forward error correction. With video, it's just like, this is all of it, this is the whole thing. Like, plan for these numbers, plan for video probably needing to use error correction. If it doesn't, then you're gonna get more overhead and have less actual used data. So if we take a look at some actual numbers, this is a sneak peek at some of the data I'll show at the end of the deck that came from Microsoft. But basically, I have data for all of 2013, for all Microsoft employees, for all video usage on Link, which is a lot of data. One of the first things is that when you look at peer-to-peer calls versus conference calls, conferencing numbers are lower. So sending, receiving, actually let me go back. One of the first things to notice is that whether it's SVC or RTV, those numbers are typically the same. So SVC is added higher quality. I can tell the difference between a 720p call and an RTV and an H.264 SVC. Because first time I started testing 2013, I was with same camera, same equipment. I was like, wow, that looks a lot better. It was obvious. And when you put the screenshots next to each other, it's night and day. So there is a little bit more in that, but based on the flexibility of it, you're not always using those numbers. So they're pretty comparable. Another thing to point out is Microsoft has a lot of panoramics, probably more roundtables than anybody. So this data is peppered with panoramic that may not be applicable to some customers. From this point forward, the new CX devices that support high def, these numbers are going to go up because, let me go back a couple slides. We can see there's now three resolutions for the panoramic. So that low resolution is the same one that was available in RTV. So it could be RTV or it could be SVC. It just depends on the system that it needs to be sent to. But it's basically the same numbers. And then they added a 720p slice and a 1080p slice. So if you think of like 7 or 10 stream, slicing off like the bottom fifth of that screen, that's what the panoramic looks like. Yeah, so back on this slide, again, this is an example of peer-to-peer calls, single video using a large amount of the screen. Conference calls, we're back down to gallery, less screen. So again, conference calls are typically using less bandwidth than peer. So if we look at some examples of peer calls, these numbers are straight out of calls. I've done tons of tests, and this is one specific set of calls. It's not a bunch of averages, but they're very in line with what you would typically see. So if you actually can find someone who can send you 1080p, which is getting more common, but you still pretty much need like a quad core. 720p is a lot more common now. You don't need to have that hardware that you used to, but 1080p is still tough. You're not going to see it much. it's doable, but it's going to be more applicable to like room systems or something where you'd want that high resolution. So you can see that its maximum is up above 4. The average is up near 3. But as we shrink the screen, it's actually in reverse because normally default is what you'd start with. But as the screen size changes, you can see the frame rate and resolution changes. So what's interesting here is the default video window, which is I start video and I don't mess with my screen at all. It's actually small enough that it's 15 frames and not 30. So the default video is a very small amount of video usage. It requires people to actually change their layouts, drag video full screen, put video gallery over another screen. But if they're leaving the screen alone, which you think most consumers of this product, just regular information workers, people that aren't necessarily IT savvy, they just want to join the meeting. They're not going to be futzing around with all the arrows and maximizing, minimizing, unless there's a reason. So the bulk of the users are sticking with the default approach. So it's good to look at those default numbers when you're doing your planning. Don't plan for 1080p. You're going to have like way too big a budget in your network, unless that's your goal. But you don't necessarily need to do that. So now if we look at conferencing, I'll build this out so you can kind of see the differences. But we've got two people in this call. So same systems, capable of 1080p, basically the same numbers we saw in the peer call, because same screen size, nothing's any different other than we're relaying through an MCU, but it's still two users, so one encoder, one decoder in that direction. We had another participant in, and now the video requirements actually are going up. The amount of bandwidth used goes up because I'm getting two 720p streams, which together are higher than one 1080p stream. So it's starting to look scary, right? I mean, you can imagine where this might go. Clearly, I wouldn't be bad because it wouldn't be a very good presentation. It's going to take a nosedive, right? So when you get to that third one, we can't fit three 720p streams. In fact, they're going to drop down to like 360. And this is not something that always happens. This is a very, this is an exact example, but in different situations, those resolutions might change a little bit, but they're never going to be 1080p. So depending on the resolution of that system, it could be lower, it could be a little bit higher. But the general trend is that the more you get in there, those individual resolutions drop so much that together they don't even add up to what you had before. So when we add a fourth one in here, the resolution in this scenario just happened to drop. It could go up a little, it could go down a little, it depends. What we're starting to see here is multiple resolutions. So two of these could be 360, could be 240. And that has to do with, okay, now we have more people in the call. Maybe my screen isn't as big as someone else's screen and I'm asking for a smaller resolution. And we get to that scenario where the other system is going to send two. It's going to send 360 for this guy and 240 for this guy. If that doesn't happen, then maybe they all do the 240. The more that's in there, the more complicated it can get. And then when we get to five, what we see is it kind of tips back up a little bit because we're already down to those lowest resolutions. We're down to the 360 and the 240. 180p is the lowest, but you don't necessarily see that unless you're throwing content and you're shrinking them down to that postage size video. But in this scenario, we've already gotten those individual resolutions, so they're not individually going to drop. We're just adding one. So you can see why Microsoft didn't do 6 or 10 or 20, because at this point, it just not exponentially, but it just goes up in scale. Because now we're not saving by adding more people. We're just adding another stream and another stream and another stream. So based on the design of the client and screen utilization, 5 was a really good number to certainly go much higher than 1. So if we look at the actual numbers, I'm curious. Everybody can read that pretty much. I'll point out the numbers. You don't have to like memorize this or anything. This is from the actual calls. I had two people, and we dragged a third and fourth and fifth. And this stuff all comes straight out of the media quality reports in the monitoring server. There's a lot more data than this. I just kind of boiled it down to the important pieces. So there's two things to learn about this when you're looking through the monitoring reports. One, each of these video streams is really representative of a tile. So stream 2 and stream 3 are like the second and the third box that shows up. If you're on a call for an hour, that could be 23 different people as active speakers are kicking in and out. So I don't necessarily know that one was always Dustin and two was always Chris. One was whoever was in that left square. So you can't take this data and like reverse engineer it and try to figure out, okay, this is the user that needs more bandwidth or less or whatever. It's all about just averaging everything out across the call.
So where did you measure the bandwidth? On the clients or on the MCU?
It's reported from the actual... explain it. Do you know the monitoring service?
Yeah,
it's in the monitoring service. It shows under the conferencing report. So each client, whenever it ends a call, sends the report data back up. So every endpoint sends its own details, and then it kind of puts them all together in a report. but you have to actually look at every. So this data is actually the data that was reported by my client for the call. I could go to the other 20 or 30 clients and look at the same data and put them all in Excel, and then your head would explode. So you can't go through this data and actually try to utilize it that way. So it's more.
Don't you need to scale the MCU to handle all this?
So can you bring that up at the end when we get to Q&A? Yeah. So that could turn into a discussion after the class. So we could maybe table that. Because, yeah, there's a lot of places that could go. So the key thing about this slide is that, one, and I pointed this out earlier, two 720p streams is bigger than 1080, so that's why it went up when we had a second. But we get to that multiple or gallery with a lot of people. We got different resolutions. So some were 240p, some were 360p. When we look at the frame rate, that has a huge impact in the amount of data. So there's a couple in there at 240 or 360 at 15 and 30 frames. And the ones at 15 frames are, you know, average of 50 kilobits. The ones that are at 30 frames can be up in the several hundreds. So frame rate's important there, too. And then the last component, or this is just a slide to highlight the frame rate part. So you can see that comparing two together, different frame rates, and the actual bit rate is much different. And again, the longer the call is and the more that's going on, the more these numbers really kind of boil down into averages. So in a short call, you might see numbers all over the place. So how do you control this, right? Do you want to control it? We'll get to that in the next section. But how do you control it? There's a number of settings in the Link server that allow you to do that. So the first thing is you can just say, I have here an example of a global policy and then an actual policy that was created for large meetings. So it's not global that you're forced to turn stuff on and off like with RTV and OCS. You could like change the resolution and it was like everybody. Like turn on HD, turn off HD, all calls. Here it's much more granular. So you can set up different policies, assign those users to those policies, and have a global setting and more granular settings for individual. The default, though, is everything's turned on. There's for all intents and purposes, there's no limits in this. If we look at how you might approach controlling it, first, maybe you're afraid, you just want to turn video off. So you can just set the policies to turn off, to not allow video. And you can do this at a level of peer-to-peer and conferencing. All the settings they're all conferencing commandlets. If I go back here, it's all CS conferencing policy, but it's not always just conferencing calls. Some of these actually control peer-to-peer calls, and it's documented in the TechNet. You know, you can bing that commandlet. It'll tell you which ones are which parameters are specific to peer and which ones are specific to conferencing. You still control RTV because the legacy clients that signal to or through this environment still have to have a policy to adhere to. It hasn't changed, so anytime RTV's in play, those are the settings, so you can set the maximum resolution. So RTV's done on the resolution. It's either A, B, or C, right? SVC's done on bit rate, on the actual payload numbers, so you can fine-tune it much more granularly. So let's say you're not paranoid of turning video on or off, but maybe you're thinking this gallery thing, and you didn't pay attention to my last 10 slides where gallery actually isn't a problem, but maybe you think, you know what, I'm going to turn the gallery off for some reason. Capabilities in there. And again, you can do this at a granular level between joining conferences and creating conferences, so it's not turning it on and off for everybody. You can set policies so that maybe when I create a conference, anyone joins it regardless of their settings, gallery is not allowed in this call. So you can set up large meetings, active speaker only. In fact, the default behavior in Link is that once you get above 75 users on a video conference call, the gallery goes away and it turns to active speaker. And then it doesn't matter if you go up to 250 and back down to 3, it stays active speaker. But in smaller calls, you could say, you know what, I don't want active speaker on these calls anyway. Or the inverse, you could say, I'm allowed to use video, and when I create a conference call, anyone can use, allowed to use gallery. People that join can use gallery, but if they're also defined in a policy that limits theirs, then when they join, they don't see the gallery, but everyone else is. So you have the ability to not just make it on and off for everybody. So you can say certain users by whatever your policy dictates. So let's say you're cool with gallery, you want the video on there, but you want to put some limits. And out of the box, there are limits in there. And that is not a typo. It is 50 megabits is the limit. So for all intents and purposes, there is no limit. Because if you go back through all those numbers and you try to make a video call, I did the numbers in my head. I don't even see a scenario we could actually get to that. So really, it's just the limit is off. So if you want to set limits, you can lower that number down. But what Microsoft has done is said, let the solution control all this and don't hinder any of it unless you decide that you need to do that for your network. And you can control it on send and receive individually, which is important because gallery might send or receive a lot more than sending, but if you have a system with panoramic, then you might be sending more than you're receiving these different scenarios. So you can control that. There's some guidance in the bandwidth calculator and some of the TechNet articles on what numbers you could use. I mean, you could start it low and bring it up, but if you start it too low, you could actually cripple the capabilities of it. So if you went below, for example, 240 kilobits, looking at those numbers I had before, you think you could even get 5 people in a call on like the lowest resolutions under 420? It'd be pretty tough. So you're going to actually, and I haven't even tested, I don't know what happens if it just, you don't get video from more than 3 people, or maybe the bandwidth drops and you get a 4th person, but it's really not recommended to go below that. So if you really wanted to do something like that, it might be better just to turn off gallery so you don't get some weird user experience. Just go active speaker and then keep the numbers low. And what else is important is these are measured per video source. So that's 50 megabits for my camera and 50 megabits for my round table. I'd like to see someone do a 100 megabit video call. So let's take a look at the last set of, or the last section. And these are, like I said, this is the data that came straight from Microsoft. I've adjusted these table or these graphs so that the scale is the same. So the first thing that's immediately obvious is lots more conferencing. There's two reasons for this. One, this data is skewed a little bit for Microsoft because Microsoft might do things a little bit different than a normal company. I mean, they developed the product, and their video or just their corporate culture might be different. I know I have a lot of customers that match that, and the customers are very different. So these numbers, or not these numbers, but the behavior you'll see in these slides is applicable to Microsoft. You can kind of extrapolate that into some scenarios, but this is not an indication of how all Link deployments out there are in terms of video. So clearly a lot more conference calls. One of the reasons for that is a lot of these can be two-party calls. Microsoft does a lot of scheduling. Everything they have is embedded with scheduling. It's very easy to do that. An example of using whiteboarding would actually turn a peer-to-peer call into a conference call. And based on the question earlier, when the call is done and the user hangs up and sends the report, a call that started as a peer-to-peer call but then during its life turned into a conference call will get reported as a conference call. So a peer-to-peer call in this data is a call that was two parties from start to finish. So you're always going to see a little bit more in the conferencing call scenario anyway. The second thing to point out is no, Microsoft did not uninstall Link in December. That's the holidays, so you see a dip there in July, and you see a pretty big dip in the winter, or Christmas holidays. So you see that's already going back up the first couple weeks of January, I think, is what the data went through. So what's interesting is there's a pretty large growth in internal usage in video, especially conference calls. Yep, and that, based on what I already see in the end of this, it's tracking to continue to go above that. Now, what's interesting is it's clearly not just going to go to so many minutes the network is going to seize. Typically, with the stuff, you're going to see a bell curve. You're going to see, hey, a new capability, a new bell and whistle to play with, deploy to the users. Everybody starts using video. Network guy sees it, freaks out, turns off network or turns off video, and then that's the end of your video story. And then everyone has that approach. So, it's you don't just want to take it with blind faith, but you do want to ride out that bell curve because what's going to happen? And I've seen this even in my own usage working in different companies. The novelty wears off. And then people figure out, okay, now I get video. I know when it works and when it doesn't work in terms of is the quality good or not. I can make the decision of when to add it or when it's good to use. And then also, I've met this person. I work with them many times. My team, we do team calls in video, but one-to-one, I don't do video very often. So that's another reason that you don't see peer-to-peer. So this is peer-to-peer video calls. There's probably a lot of peer-to-peer audio calls and IM sessions that video is not added. So a lot of it has to do with, is the video modality, is it adding value there at that point? So ride out that bell curve, wait to see where video tapers off, and then that's what you would need to really plan for with your numbers. So from that data, we also took the top 10 resolutions reported in the monitoring database for all these calls, and this is a mixture of peer and conference calls, so all the video minutes. Let me go back a slide and point something out. So November, 11 million minutes of video at Microsoft in 2013. So I'm expecting that number would be eclipsed sometime this year. But that's a lot of video. And that's Microsoft too, right? I've been doing video for quite a while, and 2-3 years ago, I get in meetings with Microsoft, and no one would have their camera turned on. So corporate culture, and I'll point that out in a second, but Link 2013 has helped drive it even internally. I mean, you accidentally hover over the video window, and there's your you see yourself, and you're like, I don't look too bad. Maybe I'll add video, or I'll clean up what's behind me. But it's all about it. I'll save that for later, but that's an important piece, right? So we look at the resolutions. There's 10. These are the top 10 resolutions. The ones in gray are low resolution. Blue is a standard type middle resolution, and the orange is high def. So the first thing we're seeing is there's not a lot of high def in the data. This is from a whole year's worth. The obvious thing is we look at that bottom one that's the clear winner. That's 240p. That's like the standard resolution you're going to see in most of these calls. So this tells you two things. One, users aren't messing with the layout. They're just staying in that default view. And two, content's probably part of these meetings a lot because that resolution will continue to go down as the gallery gets smaller and there's more people in the call. So nearly 90% of the conferencing calls video is enabled for are using low resolutions. And if we go, I won't go back to the table, you can go look it up later on, but if you look at those resolutions, they're low numbers. They're not, we're not doing 4 megabits times 5 or anything like that. So the capability could be there as things spike, but for overall the call, it's gonna sit at these low numbers. The other interesting thing is I put the little round table logo on that one. So that 144p resolution, that is something that you wouldn't typically see in most deployments, because again, Microsoft is a lot. So you look at that and like nearly a third or however many of their conference calls, they've got a roundtable active because they have one. I mean, I've been to Redmond, every conference room has one. When you go to the technology centers, almost every conference room has one of these. So they're really easy to add into the call, and they use that an additional resolution. So in the future, as there's more of the new CX devices out there that support higher resolution, you may see additional choices in the panoramic. You'll see not just that one low, but the real key is that 240p, that default behavior is what is used primarily. So the what's interesting when you take a look at all this data, Microsoft still has those numbers at like 50 meg. They haven't limited gallery or display type or resolution or bandwidth. They're just letting it ride and letting people use it. Now, if it continues to grow at some point, you want to stay on top of that and make sure, and then maybe you start to see scenarios where you'd want to put some limit that's actually usable, but you don't necessarily need to when you look at the data. You see that's not really happening. There's like short spikes when stuff's going on, but you don't see massive video bandwidth. What's interesting is to take a look at data for content sharing for all those RDP sessions. Add that to it because that can be using more screen than the actual video. So on here, a couple points of comparison is that, again, we're seeing that trend where conference calls are using less bandwidth than peer-to-peer calls. The other thing is that these total streams, so we go back to the earlier slides, we're talking about multiple streams, 4 in plus 1 5 out, or whatever those scenarios it might be. I kind of stress that that's not what you're getting. So if you have 5 people in the call, you're not sending 5 streams. Everybody's getting that same resolution for 2 reasons. One, if everyone leaves the default value and everyone has the same screen, everyone's asking for the same resolution. The more people mess with stuff, they might trigger someone to send a secondary or a tertiary resolution that can be used for multiple users. But the less that the users manipulate the environment, this stuff's not really going crazy on the back end. It's just sitting there, just humming along. So those numbers, I mean, we're not even at 2. We're below 1.5 average. So usually there's one stream going out of one resolution, and then those multiple temporal frame rates then come out of it. And then where that 0.4 and 0.3 come in, probably a fair portion of that are RTV. Every one of those panoramic systems that gets hooked up with an older client might be RTV. Business-to-business video calls with customers that are not in like 2013. There's a number of other RTV scenarios out there. So that number could grow over time depending on a number of scenarios. But realistically, as long as that usage stays the same and there isn't like some huge change in link where it's like, oh, add a third monitor and the video is always widescreen, you're not going to see any of that stuff really be impacted. So to kind of summarize all this stuff, first of all, you have to utilize video to take 1 kilobit of bandwidth on the network. So where do you see that actually used? Like, are you worried about networking and worried about that bandwidth for realistic reasons? Do you know your user population? I mean, this was brought up in the keynote. As time goes on, more and more people are going to say, I expect that video to be there. We're kind of hitting, you know, eclipsing that point where people that haven't grown up with it have seen the value in getting it, and people that have grown up with it, they demand that. They already know that value is inherent to them. Ubiquity. So I mentioned earlier, I have two high-definition cameras in my cell phone. However many years ago, that would be a ridiculous statement. So if the video doesn't look good or work well, it doesn't get added in the past. So, you know, Skype looks better than it ever did. As people use video and see that it's actually adding value, not just some pixelated Max Headroom thing going on that detracts from the actual, and I think I just dated myself there. Yeah, I'm a little older than I look. So, you know, that's part of it, is the devices out there support these, and the experience is better, so it's going to become more common, so that growth is still going to be there. And I mentioned this a few other times earlier, corporate culture. People I've talked to, it's like, I don't understand video, I don't like video, I don't want to use video, it doesn't get used. It doesn't get used. Some scenarios, it's the opposite, where people understand, and again, they've gotten over that bell curve, so they get where it adds value to them and where it doesn't, and they use it appropriately. And then the experience is key. If the experience isn't good, it's going to turn into that dusty system that they talked about at the keynote that nobody uses. Be like, I don't know why, but Link doesn't do video very well, so I'm not going to use the camera or anything like that. When the experience is good, it also attributes to that growth in usage. So that's pretty much key when you want to plan for that initial rollout. You might almost want to have it, you know, put a little bumper in there and give yourself a little extra room and then see what happens after it tapers off. And then decide, you know, okay, we definitely got to lock some stuff down, some stuff happened, or you know what, we were just totally overreacting and everything went off without a hitch and everything's fine. So to kind of add into that, is video applicable for all those scenarios, right? I kind of, a little foreshadowing from before, I mentioned audio is paramount. Without audio, who cares about the video? Who cares about the content? It's always like, hey, let's call back on this other bridge as this person drops. And if audio isn't working well, like I said, video is just that much more to deal with. It's not a ton more, but it's more. So that's, you know, that's certainly important there. Content is also king. Like, okay, you've gotten on the call, audio is working, you've got everyone to mute, there's no dogs barking, there's no people on trains that you're hearing. Or at least with Link, you just look for all the flashing phone icons and just mute them yourself. Add the content, and then video usually gets descaled, gets pushed off to the side, maybe you even stop video. But these two pieces are important. When they're there and this experience is good, then you can add video. And like I said, people now kind of have a, you know, a love-hate relationship with that, and it's, you know, we see the value where it's at, but don't just assume that just because it's there, everyone's going to use it. But also don't assume that maybe they won't all use it and bring the network to its knees as well. So it's just, you know, planning ahead for that. So, wow, I did that right on time. So we've got 15 minutes left for Q&A. And if you have a question, just come on up to the mic, so that way, because the session's being recorded, so the question and the answer will be on the recording.
Hello. Thanks very much. That was great. Maybe I'm just a bit slow, which is definitely possible. But could you go back over the, when we were talking about SBC at the start, you mentioned there were like multiple levels. Link only supports UCC modified.
Yeah, I can go over that.
And that was just frame rate, right? And then resolutions was going to be a separate to that. We still have to do multiple video streams for each resolution on the encode side.
Yeah. So the first piece is the UC config mode. So zero is no layering. One is temporal, which we went over the frame rate. Two is spatial, meaning that the benefit you get from frame rates is also there for resolution. So if we think of the slide that where we had a request for lower resolution comes in, the encoder still sends that high resolution, but they're layered. So just like we strip away frames with temporal, we can strip away resolutions. We can say, well, this is 180, this is 360, 720.
But Link doesn't support that yet.
Correct. Okay. And then if you go higher into 2Q and 2S, there's quality and, yeah. And basically 3 is like all of them. Okay. So you can basically say you can do a mixture of frame rate and resolution and quality. So quality is also just like how good is the picture how much data are we compressing and jamming in there. And the better it looks, the higher the bandwidth. So there's a cost associated. Microsoft didn't do it because they're like, oh, one's fine. The cost is on the encoder. I mean, the big difference with SVC is there's no MCU doing any transcoding in the middle, so the cost is on the endpoint. So we go back to that statement I made about ubiquity. So newer, more processing on the endpoint, we can do a little bit of that to save network bandwidth. So like 2Q or 2S, depending on whether it be spatial or quality, is like what it's being designed for. That would have bandwidth savings, but it's a higher cost on the processor. So in the future, when that can be added, then...
Yeah, so I think that's the bit that I don't understand, because you're still having to do the multiple encodes for, like, you've got an iPhone and a desktop and whatever else. You're still going to have at least three layers. You're saying with UC mode 2S, you're going to have even more than that. And therefore, there'll be more.
So the higher you go, the less streams you have. So in mode 1, you have a stream for every resolution with multiple frame rates.
Oh, but it's the processing power for actually
changing like
the resolution on the car. Okay.
Yeah, like if the endpoint goes, go pound sand, I can't do a 720, I'm already doing 120 or 240 or whatever, then it won't happen.
Got it.
So if the processing power is there, it could say I'll encode 5 streams, and in those streams, I'll have one stream could have all the frame rates. Could have 2 resolutions in this one and 2 resolutions in this one, and then 2 qualities in this one and 2 qualities. So the higher it could go, the more capabilities you can send to provide very unique direct experience to all those individual requesters at the cost of less individual streams being sent by that encoder.
And final question before I give way. Is there more information on this? Where can I kind of read and study?
So there's a couple... just put my name in Bing and look for my blog. Yeah, and go to the video tab. I have some articles that cover some of this stuff. I would say about 70% of this content is new stuff. Not new, but just not pulled from other decks and sources. There's some stuff out there, but a lot of this stuff, there's certain things I pointed to TechNet, but a lot of this stuff comes out of direct discussions with people, the product group, and just hounding people and going, okay, there's no answer for this. How does this work? Or just a lot of looking at logs and stuff. So we're getting more information out there, but there's some.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you. I think you said earlier that the send rate is governed by what the recipients are asking for, right? Is that correct?
It's governed by what the endpoint will send. So say we're in a video call, or we're all in a video call, and you all ask for 87 different resolutions, I'm going to be no. I'm I'll send 3. That's about all I can do.
Right.
And I'll pick A, B, and C, and then you'll all...
But it's based on these requests, basically, for
yes.
different resolutions. But what if your common problem we run into is home users or home offices are in an ADSL connection and their uprate is only less than a megabit per second?
Yep.
Does RTCP back off that send rate to something that their uplink can handle, or does it just fall over itself?
So, no, I mean... It won't fall on itself. I myself don't understand the algorithms behind how it's done, but it's a combination of processing power, available bandwidth, and a few other parameters. So the client, and again, it's okay, here's a new request coming in. Do I have the ability to squeeze this in? And if I do, am I going to impact the audio, or am I going to impact the current video? And it decides. And I think it may even try to do some of the stuff and then go, this isn't going well, and stay.
There's a back off.
Yeah, you're not just going to be okay, this has gone bad, and it's going to stay bad.
Okay. Okay, and then I know in OCS, and I don't know now with H.264, does it still use iframes and p-frames, in terms of the compression of the video? Because what we ran into is that if you had some packet loss, you get one of those big frame, mega frames, that the master frame.
Yep.
Was that iframe? I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's the same. It's even more complicated in SVC, but it's the same approach.
So you lose one packet out of that frame, and then it has to wait for that 15 seconds or so to go to that next one before it rebuilds itself, and then the video starts again. Now, has that been fixed up so that it can recover from those packet loss better than it used to?
So I don't know the exact answer, but I will say that I don't notice that nearly as bad as I did in the past. So I'm pretty sure that Microsoft, I don't know what they did, but it's definitely better. And part of that comes from all the choices.
If you come to meet for a one session tomorrow or on Thursday, we'll try to help you understand it.
Okay, great. And the other thing is all this is talking about per client streams, but when they aggregate going to the MCU, that's where a lot of the problems occur, you know, in terms of you've got all these participants with their streams trying to hit that MCU, and as long as you've got a nice hierarchical bandwidth, that's great, but then whenever you have MCU in one site and then participants in the other site, then you get into problems because they're all going over a WAN connection and so on. And we have asked Microsoft over and over, what do you want? And they say, everyone says, we want this barbelling capability between sites. Mm-hmm. And they haven't ever done it yet. And I was just wondering if there's something that's really you know, preventing this from being implemented that makes that so hard to do.
Yeah, so the first part of that is the architecture of Link, I think, not prohibits, but makes barbelling difficult. Like, they'd have to tear it down to the bare bones and redo a lot. And then secondary, so there's a session Thursday that Dustin Hannafin and Adam Jacobs, a couple Link MVPs and coworkers of mine, are doing, and they're going to talk about barbelling capabilities that are going to be available. Mm-hmm. So that would be a good thing to check out. That's Thursday morning.
Okay.
But yeah, I it would be nice if there was cascading across multiple servers. And just for everyone else in the room, what he's talking about is, so you've got a pool of front-end servers. So I join a meeting, and I click on Link Meeting, and there's a focus ID, it's mine or someone else's. That gets translated back to one server in a pool. So whether you have two servers or three or 12 or whatever, it goes to a server. Everyone that joins that call goes to that server. It doesn't matter how many pools they're connected to. So when you have these large meetings, everybody connects their media to that one server in that one pool. Now, if there's lots of meetings, that's distributed. So if everybody created their own meeting, you'd all be scattered across those 12 systems. So it's not a single point of failure. But for that call, it doesn't say, hey, wait, these users are all in APAC and EMEA. I should send them to their pool and then cascade the call on the back end. So that's a very difficult architecture to address in Link. And that'd be a question for Jamie. How about that?
Yeah, thanks.
Stay up here, Peter, because there's a question for you guys, too. So when you're looking at the reporting of the aggregate on the MCU, and then you also have the clients reporting back into the database, and that's the kind of information Unified Square can pull, is how do you correlate, you know, what are the clients reporting back versus what's the aggregate on the MCU? You know, who can tie that together, and what do you look for?
Yeah, that's where
bottlenecks.
Yeah, that's where it gets interesting, because like you think, I mentioned that when you get to 75 people, they shut off that gallery, because all of a sudden, I mean, you're still not getting more than five, but you have a lot of participants with a lot of streams going around, and what's interesting is not everyone may be looking at the same five people. Like, if everyone just joins the call and doesn't mess around, you may only have five video streams going in and out, the five active speakers going to everyone else. But you have the ability to take people from that sitting row and push them up in the standing row, and if their camera's on. So in a 100-person call, you could literally have 100 sessions. Like, everybody, I mean, it's not common, but everyone could be looking at five different people. And at that point, they're all flying all over the place, but they all are hitting the MCU. And then the MCU is just a traffic cop saying, you know, this session goes here, this session you stop because no one's looking at you, and that's constantly happening. So the answer to that, I'm not sure. I'm still digging into a lot of the stuff myself and having discussions with Microsoft in terms of, you know, that initial guidance is like, you know, test it, use it, and see what's happening, and let Link do its thing, just like, you know, let RTV scale and let SPC do its thing. But pouring through those numbers and doing things as network traces, looking at what's actually happening at individual endpoints and just spot checking stuff, that'll give you a lot of information about what you're seeing in your own deployment.
Yeah, I guess Peter just said, you know, do I want to see the roll-up of all that? And it's more about reading the tea leaves, you know, looking at the monitoring you have and interpreting it.
Yep.
So,
yeah. I mean, we suffered the same thing of trying to go and figure out where the system's falling down. You know, is it right at the client last mile? Is it in that last leg coming into the MCU? Is it between sites? You know, and we have a product called PowerView that kind of helps to analyze that stuff, but it's still hard because, you know, the raw data isn't in you have to aggregate all that raw data.
Yeah, that's one thing I'd like to see Microsoft improve a little bit upon is the monitoring data in 2013 didn't grow that much. And when you go from this active speaker RTV to multiple streams, multiple codecs, the reporting format and the way the data is aggregated in those makes it very difficult. So if that, I mean, the data's in there in SQL, so if there's ways to take that and make it a little bit more user-friendly, then that can help a lot. Personally, I've used the monitoring database more to understand behavior and, you know, look at jitter and call quality issues, but it's very difficult to just look at that data and go, this is the numbers I'm going to put in, and this is, you know, I'm going to limit calls to this. It almost might be an approach of limit the bandwidth and start at a low-ish number and then see what happens, and then, you know, tighten the screw down or loosen it back a little bit and just, you know, test. So I don't know if any other questions. We've got, you know, still 5 minutes. I'm not going anywhere. I think I'm supposed to go somewhere after for 30 minutes and do any other Q&A or deeper discussions. I just need to figure out where that is.
We've deployed Link 2013 server on the back end, but as far as our global sites, deploying Link 2013 as a client on the front end is independently left up to them based on their schedules. So we have a mix of 2010, 2013. Okay. Is there a significant difference between, in terms of strain on the back end, using one versus the other, and should we be promoting a full deployment to 2013, or will we see a significant difference?
So actually, there was a slide in there I was going to point that out, and I kind of skipped over it. So that's a good point. So when we look at a traditional gallery call default, we see these numbers. We look at ActiveSpeak or RTV, VGA scenario, we see about the same numbers. So when you look at all the data, a Link 2010 conference call at VGA at a standard screen size, maybe full screen, maybe half, compares almost right down the line with a five-person gallery call in 2013 with the video at the same, you know, half screen, full screen window. They fall right around those like 500, 600, 700 kilobit numbers. So the short answer would be really they're about the same.
Let me add to that mix. We've got about 2,000 Macs on the network off this 2011. Does the 2014
Link web app
expected to support SBC? Yeah. I know, but unfortunately the sea level folks are all
Macs. That one, I'm not sure on that one. Yes, I like that answer. I have a feeling with all the other stuff that the Mac client's getting more love shortly. And you know, we saw that Skype video in there in the keynote. I'm pointing it actually was down there. That's, you know, SVC doing that, right? So the more stuff that utilizes that H.264 SVC implementation, it's going to unlock those capabilities. So I think this probably just, I don't know, I don't want to talk out of turn, but I think it would be a matter of time just for the Mac client to get that, and then those capabilities would be the same.
Does Skype use H.264 for video?
No, it does not, but that would be my guess as to what we saw up there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm just trying not to be definitive on audio. Basically you look at the Skype app acquisition, and so this is, I don't know if it's public knowledge, but if anybody goes back to CU2 or CU3 and you do a trace on an audio call or just a video call, and you get down to SDP and you look at M equals audio and you look at all of the, and I probably lost half the group, but you look at the actual, probably not, and actually the ones that are still here probably are interested in that, so I lost the half that left. You look at all of the audio codecs, they put, thank you, they put Silk, Narrow, and Wideband in there back then. So basically what it's looking like is, hey, we're going to use the video codec and Link, put that in Skype. We're going to take the audio codec and Skype and maybe put that in Link, use best of all that stuff. And then there's no transcoding or anything on the back end. It's just, you know, Link to Link to Skype. So that's what I would expect the Skype session to talk about would be that SVC interop, because we've already got signaling, we've already got audio. So it's just video and content sharing is next.
It negotiates after RT audio Wideband.
Yeah, no, it's not being used yet today, but there's a list. In fact, I've got a blog article I plan to do in the next quarter or so where I just basically look at all those and explain, you know, what the heck, why is there like 13 different codecs in there? Because there's a lot of, I mean, there's one in there for white noise generation. So there's a lot of cool stuff in there. Thanks. So we're right at...